Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wild, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Werkraut.
And we are back. We've been on a little hiatus for a few weeks. We've been on the road at a few film festivals, so thank you all for your patience. We are back with what I hope is a really fun episode, just checking in on our experiences at these festivals, doing a little pulse check on the Oscar race, and just chatting about some of the movies that we've seen.
Yeah, this award season has really come into focus, and I think because we've been able to see a lot of these titles, it's definitely made it feel more real, but I think it's helped us in organizing our thoughts on what has been happening and what we think may happen, so we can dive into that a little bit today. But a lot of the movies we've seen and will talk about, we will definitely keep mentioning, and I'm sure a lot of our experiences will bleed into the many episodes to come. So I can't wait for all of that and to talk about the Venice Film Festival, Telluride, and Toronto. Today, we'll talk about those winners, and to do so, because we were all at the Toronto Festival together, is Bennett Prosser. Welcome back. It's also been a while since you've been on, Bennett.
Happy Tifty.
Oh.
Hi, guys.
My God.
Everyone's saying Tifty. Hey. Yes, very happy to be here. Happy to be back with you all. Long time no see, at least for the listeners. Maybe long time since I've been on the pod, but not long time no see for you two, because we spent a lot of the last week together, which was wonderful, at my first TIFF. And I think, was it both of yours as well?
Yeah, also my first TIFF. So It was exciting to get to do some of the festival with you both, too. And it's always good to see you in person.
Yeah, getting to sit next to you both for some great premieres, maybe a couple not so great premieres, and that we can dive into when we get to the TIFF section. But just to be in that environment is really exciting, to be kind of on the ground where you hear people talking about their initial reactions. And it's such a luxury to go to festivals when you may have heard a little bit about the movies, but you're really spending the time forming your own opinions and being there where, you know, in the room where the buzz happens. So yeah, it was a great time.
Yeah. So like we said, it's been, I think, kind of a hectic past few weeks as we've been, you know, traveling to these festivals and just keeping up on the buzz and the news that's been coming out of them. I think we can start with Venice. So you two have gone to this festival in the past and have recapped it, but none of us went this year. This is the first of the big fall film festivals that we cover every year. And this has a film festival jury. This year it was led by Alexander Payne. He was the president. We'll go through the awards quickly. So the Golden Lion, that's the top prize, went to Father, Mother, Sister, Brother, the Jim Jarmusch film. Nick, you and I will see that at New York Film Festival, where it will play as the centerpiece selection. The Grand Jury Prize went to The Voice of Hind Rajab by Kauter Benhania, who we've talked about a number of her films, actually, in previous seasons. First, The Man Who Sold His Skin a few years ago. The special jury prize went to Below the Clouds from Gianfranco Rossi. The Silver Lion for Best Director went to Benny Safdie for The Smashing Machine. The Volpe Cup for Best Actor went to Tony Cervillo for La Grazia. And the Volpe Cup for Best Actress went to Jin Zilei for The Sun Rises on Us All. And screenplay went to At Work. So these are our Venice winners. I think notably missing from this list, we had Park Chan-wook's film No Other Choice, which was definitely one of the buzziest titles at TIFF. So the skipped over Telluride went to TIFF and will also be premiering at New York Film Festival. We also didn't get Kathryn Bigelow's A House of Dynamite in the award winners list, but this also, I think, premiered really well. And then some films with positive responses that we didn't see here. Begonia, I think, played pretty well at Venice. I would say at least mixed positive. Jay Kelly and Frankenstein actually didn't do as well at Venice, but ended up rebounding, I think, a little bit later at other festivals, and we can talk about that. And After the Hunt, the Luca Guadagnino film, that wasn't eligible for awards as it played out of competition. But this really hit with a thud, I think, at Venice and just did not really receive positive reviews. But as we've talked about throughout the season, you know, each festival has its own unique ecosystem, and the critics at film festivals are very different. And I think of the three festivals we will talk about today, the harshest critics are at the Venice Film Festival. So sometimes you will see more negative responses on films or mixed responses coming out of that festival for sure. But what did you guys think of this winner's list? Does anything stand out to you, whether it's a winner or an omission?
I think what stands out as maybe the, just looking across the list of winners and also thinking back to Cannes and the kind of big movies that came out of that festival, is that what is being highlighted is not primarily Hollywood, you know, big publicity American films or ones that we really expect to come up in the Oscar race. I remember coming out of Cannes, there was a lot of talk about how it was just with the couple of years going up to it, it was getting more and more Oscar-y. And this year, it's still pretty more international films doing well. And basically looking at this list of Venice winners, you mentioned some of the missing things that seem like more likely Oscar-related titles that we'll maybe be talking about more. Whereas the ones that are getting some wins, the closest thing to, you know, a celebrity or kind of the biggest name in here would be Benny Safdie for The Smashing Machine, thinking specifically about Dwayne The Rock Johnson leading that movie. So I think that is interesting that these European festivals are maybe veering away from the trends that we've seen them go to recently. So that's the biggest thing that jumps out to me. I don't know, Nick, do you agree?
I do, and that's surprising, I think, because Alexander Payne was leading the charge in Venice. I did hear rumblings or rumors of potential drama. I don't think we have to go into that and what that meant for everything, but I think it is interesting because these are taking place in international waters, that with Cannes, and we talked about that, of the biggest multiple films being international and that continuing here. And we'll talk about TIFF in a minute, but I think my biggest shock was with Benny Safdie. It wasn't what I was expecting in the director category, at least, maybe an actor, you know, even with Emma Stone for Begonia, or just thinking what could happen at the Oscars and seeing Father, Mother, Sister, Brother show up in the top prize was also unexpected. I think just seeing Jarmusch's name show up at the top also made me question things a little bit. I will say I did seek out the actress-winning film, The Sun Rises on Us All, at TIFF. And I think even just that performance makes so much sense for this body, whereas it absolutely will not for the Oscars. So we can talk about international feature also and in what has been selected, because some of these are or will be submissions and eligible for that category at the Oscars too. But it's interesting that the Best Picture race, we have nearly zero comments on that right now with this festival. And obviously with Telluride, we'll get to as well, because there aren't awards there and there aren't awards at New York. We're really looking at the slates and what is coming out where and seeing what the responses are, even though, again, those aren't industry people. We're thinking about the public and juries and critics. So I think this happens early in every award season that we have to be careful of, because things will change over the next couple months as we start to hear from more of those voting members.
And I do like that mix, that these don't have to be Oscar predictors. They can just exist mm-hmm. as their own things, right? As these festival awards. And you mentioned Telluride, and at Telluride, like you said, they don't do awards there, which is kind of a nice thing about that festival. I think you can really feel that lack of pressure and glamour when you're there on the ground. I personally enjoy that. Like, I liked seeing Jesse Buckley walking around in jeans and Birkenstocks, and they feel a little bit more at home than I think at some of these larger festivals. It's a much smaller and more intimate environment. So a couple of the titles did carry over to Telluride. I went again. This was my third time going to that festival. It is a joy, one of my favorite things that I do every single year.
Talk about a luxury.
Oh, it is just the best. It really is. It's just like you get there and it's idyllic. And I think it's the most, it might be the most beautiful place in the U.S. It just is stunning. And you get to watch brand new movies. It really is a thrill. And I think a lot of the Venice titles actually played better at Telluride. I know Begonia, which is the new Yorgos Lanthimos film, that was not a favorite of mine at the festival. I did not really enjoy it. Not really surprised there, but I do think that Jesse Plemons and Emma Stone give strong performances in that movie, and we could see them throughout the season potentially. Same with the adapted screenplay from Will Tracy, who wrote The Menu, but this will not be everyone's cup of tea. I think it actually feels more like old school Lanthimos than the Tony McNamara collaborations. So we'll see how that plays. Jay Kelly, I think, certainly played better there. Nick, you will see that at New York Film Festival. This is Noah Baumbach's film about Hollywood, about an aging movie star named Jay Kelly, of course, played by George Clooney. And Adam Sandler plays his manager. I think Adam Sandler is the standout performance here. And this is, I think, one of Netflix's big contenders, but Netflix has a pretty big slate this year. And I know you both saw Train Dreams at TIFF, but in my mind, this is something that I think audiences will like. It's a very different flavor for him, though. It's not so cynical and mean, which I kind of like his cynical and mean movies. This is a bit sweeter, a little bit more sentimental. So I'm curious to see what you guys think of it when you eventually get to it. And then Frankenstein, which I think played much better at TIFF, which we'll talk about. Telluride, it had a really bad scheduling block. They scheduled it at 10:15 and 10:30 at night. And that is just not the right time for this 2 hour and 40 minute movie that does move very slowly. So I think that definitely helped it. At TIFF, it did not play well, really, at Telluride at all. So it's always interesting to see what plays well at certain festivals and not at others. But a lot of Cannes movies did come to Telluride. We had Sentimental Value, It Was Just an Accident, The Secret Agent, The Mastermind. Some great picks, I think, from Cannes. Sentimental Value did really well. Same with It Was Just an Accident. I think those of the Cannes titles were the two that people were talking about the most, and that I think really continued into TIFF as well. But the big movie of Telluride, aside from a few other world premieres that we had in Ballad of a Small Player and Springsteen, Deliver Me from Nowhere, was Hamnet, Chloe Zhao's film based on Maggie O'Farrell's novel about Shakespeare's son named Hamnet, and the perceived connection between the death of Shakespeare's son Hamnet and the creation of Shakespeare's maybe most well-known tragedy, Hamlet. So back then, Hamlet and Hamnet were interchangeable names, so that's why a lot of scholars have connected it, and this is, I think, a brilliant work of historical fiction. So I was really eager to see how this adaptation turned out, and I was really impressed by it. I was so happy with my Telluride experience, I think mostly just because of Hamnet, honestly. That was my favorite thing that I saw there, and really, I think the standout of the festival for me and also for many others.
Well, and that's a great segue into our conversation on Toronto and TIFF, because that was our big winner of the People's Choice Award. We had been questioning what could take the top prize. Would it be something Oscar-leaning? And this was one of the most anticipated of this festival and one where tickets went extremely fast. So there were many screenings. And I think in being at the festival, thinking about, oh, what could be there, it really made me rethink of what we see in the top three because of screening size or how many screenings they have for a movie or what people are talking about. And I didn't expect, or maybe I wanted other movies to show up there, didn't expect maybe Hamnet to take it, but it did. In first runner-up was Frankenstein, and second runner-up was Wake Up Dead Man. Also remember that Nomadland won in 2020, and that went on to win at the Oscars. So Hamnet, I would say, is very much a front runner in our current conversation for the Oscars. And then this year was the first year that they actually split up the People's Choice Awards and made an international category. And so here, No Other Choice took the top prize with Sentimental Value in runner-up and second runner-up being Homebound. I think the top two here are and have been very much in the conversation as well. And then in documentary, we have The Road Between Us, The Ultimate Rescue. This was a contentious pick. Bennett reminded me that it was taken out and put back into the selection after some great controversy. In runner-up is Epic, Elvis Presley in Concert by Baz Luhrmann. And in second runner-up is You Had to Be There, How the Toronto Godspell Ignited the Comedy Revolution. So I think you start to get into and see some of the Canadian categories and maybe the impact that the city has on some of these winners. And, you know, hearing the festival coordinator talk about how many hundreds of thousands of people come, it does make sense that, you know, there is some hometown glory to it all. And Toronto being in this title, I think, just shows how much they love this festival. So in looking at the lineup, we had a lot of holdovers from Cannes, from Telluride, many of the ones you just mentioned, Sophia, many from Netflix. They had a lot of premieres there, also including Train Dreams, like you mentioned, Nouvelle Vague, and Ballad of a Small Player, and then some other world premieres that I think were talked about quite a bit, including Rental Family for Brendan Fraser's performance, Christie with Sydney Sweeney, The Lost Bus with Matthew McConaughey and America Ferrera that you both saw and we had mentioned before, Nuremberg with Russell Crowe, Rami Malek, and Michael Shannon, and also Hedda. We had been highly anticipating this release. This is with Tessa Thompson, Nina Haas, and Imogen Poots by Nia DaCosta. I love this. I'm excited to talk about this, but lots of movies. And I think to see what we saw win the top prizes surprised me in a way. I think Frankenstein coming in runner-up was because of the size of the audiences and that just being one of the hottest tickets. But I'm not surprised by Wake Up Dead Man, which I was very happy with, had an incredible time. It's funny. It's as enticing as Rian Johnson's other movies. So I think we have a lot of films that we now will be talking about in the Oscar conversation in various ways with acting performances or some with the top prizes and director. But I think now we're finally seeing some of those more Hollywood films or American films that we maybe had been expecting to find, unlike at Cannes or Venice.
Well, I want to ask you both, I think before we really dig into the movies, about your experience at TIFF and just what you thought of the festival overall, like just little things that stood out to you. I think for our listeners who haven't been, it would be good to just describe what it's like, how it maybe compares to other fests that we've been to, what the theaters are like, everything like that. I feel like it's always interesting to dive into.
Yeah, I'll jump in. So TIFF really feels like a people's festival.
Mm-hmm.
Nick mentioned how many people attend. And yes, there's a lot of press. There's a lot of people from the industry. But there are so many screenings happening simultaneously that the choices of what film you're going to see, where it is, there are six different movies starting at the same time that you could feasibly choose between if you can get the ticket. I think another thing that was notable compared to some of the other bigger festivals that we've been to is that TIFF happens in the middle of the city. It is just at movie theaters that are just on city blocks. You know, Venice, it's on an island. Telluride's in the mountains. New York is in its own district that is pretty, you know, sectioned off, and you're only there if you're going to the theater. TIFF is in the theater district or the entertainment district of Toronto, but it is just, you just feel like you're in the middle of a city. So that means that rush lines for screenings are just down the block and around the corner and then across the street, like across the intersection. And you just feel like you're in the middle of, you know, you can just pop over to a restaurant. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to get food. So it really feels like you can just attend to this just kind of as a civilian, but then go to so many things. I guess from my own experience, lucky to be going with you guys, and I really marathoned it and I stayed for the entire festival. So I was there from day one through Nick and I attended the awards ceremony on the last day. And I saw a total of 34 TIFF movies.
That's amazing.
Which is, thank you. I don't recommend it. is my verdict, because that's, you know, it was like 10 days of a festival, so three or four a day ish and I definitely reached a point where I couldn't tell you what movies I had seen a couple days ago, or, you know, I was becoming emotionally stunted to whatever was happening before me, because I was just, especially in when you get to the 30s, then the burnout starts really happening. Mm-hmm. So it was incredible. And I would not trade it for the world. But yeah, it was a lot. So you can do a lot if you can get tickets. And tickets are not, if you're going for very particular things, they can be very hard to come by. So I think having a ton of knowing the slate really well and doing a lot of research beforehand to say, oh, here's this really small movie I've never heard of that maybe I might be interested in if there's a ticket, having those in your back pocket so you can fall back on them, so that the major titles, which are probably going to be sold out before you can even try, mm-hmm. So that you can fall back to them, and then hopefully find some gems in there. I don't know, was that similar for you guys in terms of getting into screenings and needing to change your schedules around a ton?
Yeah, it was, because I didn't get into Hamnet. I didn't see If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. I didn't see some of those really big titles that I was maybe assuming I would have the chance to see, because of what you're saying of, you know, you would line up in a rush line around the block. And as I experienced it, I started to change my outlook and say, okay, I'm going to see this at New York, or wait until it's released wide. But I think that's what I really loved about the festival, too, is that you would sit down and someone next to you just starting a conversation saying, how are you? What are you here for? Or just starting to talk about their experience, or you would hear someone behind you doing the same thing. And, you know, getting to talk to people about what they liked, it really did change what I wanted to see. This lady was like, I really love Julian and Dust Bunny. Sigourney Weaver was wonderful. And so I looked them up and I was like, I hadn't heard of these movies before. And mm-hmm. It's the perfect time to see some smaller films. Another lady who on my last viewing during Julian, which I ended up seeing and loving, she was like, I just see things that nobody's ever going to see, or that, you know, people won't get to see for a long time. And I think that's such a great way to look at festivals, because there are hundreds of screenings and filmmakers just wanting to get their shorts or features shown. And I think being there at the awards ceremony, seeing these names up of people that are winning, that are just so excited and are making their debuts, you know, that is really what the festival experience is. And I would say that this is maybe the most wonderful experience I've had. I mean, like, yes, Cannes is the most prestigious and, you know, has its own flair because it's so elegant. But I think this one being for the people is really special in its own way. So I had a great time. I saw 24 movies. That's more than enough anyways. And I've got to see some gems along the way that hopefully we'll talk about in the future, but not necessarily having to rely on, oh my God, it's Oscar season, I can't wait to see these that will be out in a couple of weeks or months anyway. But I had a wonderful time.
I'm so glad to hear that. It is such an extreme experience, I think, compared to their festivals. Bennett, like you were saying, like how it feels just so large and so accessible and public, and it's just right in the middle of downtown. So for me, going from, and I was only in Toronto for a few days, so I didn't do the full marathon really like you guys did. I was only able to come for just a little bit of the fest, but going from tiny Telluride to downtown Toronto for this festival, I told you, it felt like a parade or like a convention. It was just so overwhelming to me right away. I was in shock. And I knew it was the largest public film festival. I knew it was going to be big. But the whiplash of going from Telluride to TIFF was pretty crazy. I think some unexpected things for me. First, the commercials that play before the movies.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard about the famous Zendaya Anne Hathaway ad from a few years ago, but you really do see the same commercials before every single movie, and they would just start playing in a loop on my head. Like, there was one that took place at one of the theaters, and it was the 50th year of TIFF. So this woman, she just kept saying, "Happy TIFFy, we're calling it TIFFy," over and over. There was another one that was kind of a spoof on a Hallmark Christmas movie. There was an ad for the Varda, which is inside the light box, which is where a lot of the theaters are. And in that ad, people would clap along. There was also a part, like, there was a moment where they would tell you not to record the screen. And everyone in the theater went, "Arg," when they would do that. And that was so random and funny. I was like, are these just TIFF things?
Yeah.
Very
much. The Varda
one, I imagine, is a tradition. Uh-huh. The recording one was like piracy noises.
Yes, right.
Right? Okay. And there were a couple other ones where people would collectively shout something back to the screen.
Yeah.
And because we're all there for the first time, I couldn't tell if these were all ads that are there all the time. So these are traditions that they know mm-hmm. what to say back. Or if there are new ads and the audience is just developing these through the festival uh-huh. and it's just spreading like a virus throughout all the public screenings. But it was fun. It was very enthusiastic crowds. They talk about the TIFF audience being a very discerning group of people who are very passionate about what they're seeing. And that ties back into how it's the award of the festival is the People's Choice Award instead of a primarily juried one. So. Real quick on just like how the People's Choice Award works, because I had not really thought about the rules or the process of how mm-hmm. that gets determined, even though we hear so much about it. However many, you know, in the past 15 years or so, a significant number of the winners have gone to have Best Picture nominations. But I never really thought about just like how it's tabulated, how the voting happens, what goes into it. Essentially, the winner of the People's Choice Award is the film that had the highest ratio of attendees who went onto the voting website after the screening and submitted that they liked the movie. It is proportioned across all of the screenings and the tickets sold. They cross-check your email address with their attendee list and, you know, like who the ticket was sold to. So it's not a number voting system that I expected. I thought it was like rate it 1 through 5, you know, and the highest one wins. It is, do you have the enthusiasm to go to the website and submit this film that you loved? So I think that's where you see a lot of enthusiasm in resulting in the winners. I think particularly mm-hmm. with something last year, like The Life of Chuck winning, that thinking that came from all the Mike Flanagan and Stephen King fans, that makes sense, that if you can get a stan army to go and everyone submit their vote, then that'll work. But in this case, I think it shows things like Hamnet and Frankenstein and No Other Choice in particular as well, movies that you would hear people talking about them. They were really hard to get a ticket, and they even would start adding additional screenings of them mm-hmm. as the festival goes along, dropping some hints that this one's popular. I think even Frankenstein had like 6 or 7 public screenings. It was just so popular. And there's, you know, enough people were enthused about it to go and vote. So that was always, as someone who loves dissecting the intricacies of voting systems, that was really interesting to learn kind of what that process is.
That's fascinating. And it's not something anyone talks about ever. Like, people talk about, oh, this movie won the People's Choice. Oh, can people just go on and vote for whatever movie they want if they didn't even attend the festival? you know, I think people have a lot of questions about that. So that was really helpful. I actually did not know that. So thank you. I think it also makes it more interesting to see the results, knowing how the system actually works.
And with that, it's literally just like a blank website. You type in the movie, you click submit, and that's it. So it's really this large database for anyone to type in what they've seen and to just submit it. It's really easy. I think with that, it made me question this year, because they have the split categories between the People's Choice and the International. Obviously, documentary has been there and split up too, but it makes me wonder if they were all in one section, if they would overlap each other, like No Other Choice winning, was that higher than Hamnet or lower? Would it have been in that top three if this was a combined category still?
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter in the end, but I think seeing how all of the films fare is a more interesting thing just for me, maybe, because I think that and Sentimental Value were very high. I know it does give the opportunity for more titles to be named. So I like that, you know, spreading the wealth a little bit is a part of that.
I feel like there isn't a ton of clarity with the new category of whether the international and documentary films are excluded from the main award or not. I think because this year there was no overlap, assuming that Hamnet would be considered not an international production, or Frankenstein, you know, if those aren't considered in the international bucket, then as it stands right now, the three People's Choice winners were not international or documentary. So it's a question, like Nick, you're saying, like, I would also think that No Other Choice probably would have, just based on what people were saying, I think it would have scored higher than Wake Up Dead Man.
Oh, I'm sure. So. And Bennett, your argument about Life of Chuck last year, like the Stephen King and Mike Flanagan fans going to vote, that to me is like Frankenstein and Wake Up Dead Man. Like Guillermo del Toro, people love him. And he was at the festival, and I think it had such a warm reception there because people love his movies too and want to support him. And it's the same thing, I think, with Rian Johnson and the Knives Out movies, that the premieres are sort of a staple of the TIFF experience. Like when one is there, you should go see it. And I had a really good time at the premiere for Wake Up Dead Man. And I think part of it was just seeing it at the festival. I think that's a huge thing that can really happen. But I think one of the best things really about this festival for me was just getting to see things that who knows when I'm going to see them. Like there was a morning when I had to choose between Rental Family and Poetic License. And Poetic License is Mon Apatow's directorial debut with Andrew Barth Feldman, her real-life mom, Leslie Mann, and Cooper Hoffman. And I just thought, you know, this doesn't have a distributor. Who knows when it's going to come out? It will definitely find a home. It's a lovely movie. But I just thought, like, I know I'm going to see Rental Family at some point. It's Searchlight. It's going to make its way to me. Why not see something that I don't really know when I'm going to see otherwise. So that's kind of my approach to this festival too. Like if I can save some of the bigger titles for later, when I know I'll get to see them, I will. And I'll maybe see some things that I might not get to see otherwise.
I felt the same getting to see 34 films. They're, like I mentioned, kind of having good fallbacks of, I want to see something right now. What can I get a ticket for? That a lot of those ended up being little small gems. So agreed.
So do either of you have either a favorite from the festival or like these smaller gems that you're talking about, some that you really loved and hope find a home apart from Poetic License? Because I also really enjoyed that. I think it's a great time and a film that, as I was watching it, knew would be seen by groups of teens and young adults on the big screen and have a good time also. I know you reviewed that for the festival, Sophia, so everyone check that out. And we all have a few reviews going out. But yeah, what were some of your favorites? If you have any different kinds of superlatives for films you saw and really enjoyed, you can include Telluride also, I'd say.
Okay. Bennett, do we want to talk about The Testament of Anne Lee, which we saw together?
I would love to.
So this is Mona Fastfold's film that she co-wrote with Brady Corbet. They also co-wrote The Brutalist together. And this is, I mean, it's not The Brutalist, but it is about an artist who goes to America and starts spreading their vision in a new country. This time, though, it's Amanda Seyfried, and she plays Anne Lee, the former leader of the Shakers. So she's a religious leader, and this is a musical. It is one of the most beautiful movies, I think, visually, I've seen this year. I loved the cinematography, and Daniel Blumberg is back doing the score. And I think the way that this film incorporates song and dance is fascinating, and how it ties into their religious practice. So I was a big fan. It's a strange movie. It doesn't have a distributor yet, so I'm curious who will pick it up, but I really, really enjoyed this one.
It's really wild that it doesn't have a distributor, not because it's an easily marketable film or, you know, one that there's an obvious choice for what its distribution will be, but it feels like such a large production and has a pretty big cast. Outside of Amanda Seyfried, there's Lewis Pullman and Thomasin McKenzie. I think the name recognition of having Brady Corbet as one of the co-writers, we saw from the people who were attending the screening that we were in, that it just his name seemed to drive a fair number of people to go see the movie, that maybe once they saw it and reacted to it, some people that were in our audience did not love that it wasn't exactly The Brutalist that they expected.
Right.
I think you can tell that it comes from similar artistic brains, but it is a completely different type of movie and much more Mona Fassbender's movie, obviously, as the director. And I'm really excited to see it again whenever it does come out. You mentioned it being a musical. Technically, it's a musical, quasi-musical. There is song and dance.
Yes. A lot of movement and song. But a lot of, yeah.
Yes. And that's from, you mentioned Daniel Blumberg adapting a lot of Shaker spirituals into song, and then they're choreographed into just very, like, visceral religious experiences that the characters are having. So I think it's a really interesting movie, and I hope that it gets released so that there can be more discussion about it than I think some of the things that people were saying while we were there.
Mm-hmm. This was definitely, I think, like, the most original feeling movie that I saw, I think, in my slate. I saw a lot of romantic comedies, coming of age movies, and this one did, I think, hit pretty hard. But I also, I think before I talk about Hamnet, I really liked Hedda, Nia DaCosta's Hedda Gabler adaptation. And I think as an Ibsen adaptation, she makes some really exciting new choices. She makes Hedda a queer character. She gender flips one of the roles that is traditionally played by a man. And here, that character is actually Eileen, played by Nina Hoss in what's one of my favorite supporting performances of the year so far. I really enjoy her in this, but I loved the back and forth between Tessa Thompson and Nina Hoss. I think that it is also just such a rich, catty, like, nasty movie in so many ways. I love things like that. And the cinematography, too, from Sean Bobbitt, I think is just gorgeous. It's a very, like, lush, warm environment. And you're really at this party the entire movie. And I was never bored once.
And we have a score by Hildur Guðnadóttir, who won for Joker, which I loved, but I loved this movie so much. I had so much fun. I was thinking of Tar during it. I know it's, like, not structured like that movie, but I think it captures performances that are as daring as it. I loved really everyone. I think, yes, Tessa and Nina give two of the best of the year, but I really liked Imogen Poots, who has a smaller supporting performance, but still is really so emotional and dialed in. The setting, this elegant mansion, whenever you have a garden maze, it's like having a club scene in a movie. I'm just, like, immediately drawn to it. And it just felt like a ticking time bomb of understanding really quickly who Hedda is. And I think Tessa Thompson does that beautifully. And just, you know, you're getting the act title cards. You're getting these really rich characters and drama that you know is happening, but you can see her planning at the same time. I absolutely loved it. I hope we're talking about it later this year.
Yeah, I think with the rest of the season, one thing I'm curious about, so this is Amazon MGM, and it is doing a brief theatrical run before a prime release. And I'm wondering if the, you know, less than stellar reviews for After the Hunt could make Amazon shift their priorities a little bit and actually put some weight behind this movie, which was received really positively at TIFF, and especially for Tessa Thompson's performance. I think they could really focus their campaigning on that.
Yeah, I agree. And I did see it as well. It was one of the last films I saw, so I'm going to look forward to a second viewing mm-hmm. in terms of my ability to process it. But I will say, look out for Nina Hoss's wig and dress, which are two of the most upsetting things that I saw at the festival. And I think that it's on purpose.
It's definitely on purpose. Okay. But yeah, I agree with you. The dress specifically, when she walks in and it almost looks like a bedazzled dirndl. I'm like,
Yep.
She's looking like a barmaid. So look forward to those in any of the promotional stills when that comes out.
I will say for me, in terms of other movies that I really liked, I think one that we'll definitely be talking about is The Voice of Hina Rajab. That is way too intense to go into fully today, but is about the conflict in Gaza between Palestine and the Israeli army. This is a true story based on real events. I was like shaking, very uncomfortable, moved after this screening. It was one of my favorites of the festival. I think this will be in the international feature conversation. Also, one of my favorites was The Mysterious Gaze of a Flamingo, which won the Uncertain Regard Prize and also in some of their queer categories as well. So this did very well and is just a beautiful portrait of these trans women living in Chile where the miners work. It's this rural setting and has to do with the AIDS crisis and how that is dealt in the community and how they are perceived as women. It's very beautiful and also moving. I would say my favorite films that I hope get distribution would be Obsession, which came in runner-up in TIFF's Midnight Madness category, which are genre films that are usually very bloody or action forward. And this movie just really blew me away. The description on the website before I went to the festival, and again, you're choosing films based on a still and a one or two paragraph synopsis, and something about this still with Michael Johnston, who has acted in other horror films, and Barbarian being mentioned, really just called to me, and I had such a whirlwind of a time. I would also liken it to Talk to Me and Smile, given the performances and the material that is being brought about. So keep your eyes out for that, because that was the first sell of the festival too by Focus Features for $15 million. I think that was really exciting. And my other one, oh my God, I have two. I mean, I want to say Exit 8 because that was at Cannes. That was just so much fun. It's like this VR video game made into a movie. So kind of different, but really enthralling. And Bad Apples with Saoirse Ronan. It's this black comedy satire on education and what happens when you have a really terrible student who you can't control. How do you get him out of the classroom? And it's another fun, like, snowball kind of movie where one decision ends up snowballing and just blowing completely out of proportion. I loved her performance here and some of the children who have their debut performances that I think are really convincing and gnarly in a way. It's kind of funny how they twist and turn in their characters throughout the movie. So, I mean, we all saw so many, but I will be keeping an eye on some of these that I saw that I hope get a home, and we can talk about those when that happens.
And I, like I said, I saw 34. I'm not going to run them down today, but saw a ton that I look forward to coming back on in the coming months to talk about some of the bigger films, maybe some of the smaller ones, especially. I tried to see a fair number of international features, either submissions or ones that will hopefully be submitted. But I did see some of the bigger Oscar players like Sentimental Value, No Other Choice, The Secret Agent, Train Dreams, Hamnet. Saw those big ones that we will talk about as time goes along. But Nick and probably others getting annoyed at how much I am talking about Baz Luhrmann's epic, which is what it's billed as, Baz Luhrmann's epic EPIC Elvis Presley in concert. I was so excited when it placed second in the documentary People's Choice Award. This movie, it is a basically while Baz was making Elvis in 2022, he and his team got access to previously unaired rehearsal footage of Elvis Presley's concerts that he put on, I think at his Vegas residency or what turned into the residency. So it is a concert movie that is cutting between Elvis's rehearsals in the, you know, just like studio rehearsals and then stage rehearsal and then the actual show. And it was the most fun thing that I saw out of all 34 movies. I was in a press screening and at one point just turned and looked around in IMAX as well. And so seeing it in IMAX was huge. At one point turned and looked around and every press and industry person was either dancing in their seat or dancing on their feet.
Oh my God.
At the very least, a foot was tapping. It was the most enthusiastic thing that I've seen in response that happened there. So I don't know how it would play on TV. I have no idea what its future will be, but if that does get especially an IMAX release at some point, then I cannot strongly recommend it enough. And I'm not even like a big Elvis fan, but it is just the hits and it's really well edited and just a great time. So I'm pushing that one hard. The other ones that are smaller that I really enjoyed, I don't know if this necessarily counts as smaller, but I did see It Was Just an Accident from Jafar Panahi. And that, on the other end of the coin, from my Baz Luhrmann Elvis documentary experience, It Was Just an Accident was probably the most emotional experience for me. Mm-hmm. Because Panahi was there. And I texted you guys this, that he was there for the intro. He then immediately got on a plane to go somewhere. So there was no Q&A, but he introed it. And his last film, No Bears, was one that Nick and I were at the premiere of in Venice in 2022. And at that premiere, there was a ceremonial empty chair with his name on it at the Venice Festival that all the rest of the cast and the crew were there. And afterwards, there was a long standing ovation where we all turned and clapped at this empty chair. So for him to then 3 years later come out at a screening in North America, and I know he's touring around with this movie quite a bit, but for him to be there, I did not expect it. And I just like, I reported it, but I just sobbed through his entire intro. And then the movie started. So that was an incredible experience. Also just something about TIFF in general. There are so many screenings where the filmmakers are there for an intro and a Q&A, even deep into the festival. It's not just mm-hmm. something that happens early on. That was just very exciting. And I loved the movie. And obviously we will be talking about that going forward. But that was a very special experience.
I also love that movie. One of my favorites from Cannes. The ending, oh my God. I have chills thinking about it. So Jafar Panahi got one of the silver medallions, which is the tribute that Telluride does. And I saw him on Colorado, which is the main street in Telluride. And I just got teary-eyed right away. It is like it's a very moving thing to see him around. Just like you were saying, it's especially surreal, I think, when you think of what he's been through, what he's done to get his films out into the world, out to these festivals. Yeah, it's intense. So yeah, I love that one. I think we'll be talking about it a lot. A couple of the movies that you listed have already been selected by their countries too, so we'll definitely be talking about those throughout the season. I think the last thing really with this festival and Telluride was just Hamnet, which has, I think, really taken both festivals by storm. It was the most talked about film at Telluride and now is the People's Choice Award winner. I was a huge fan of the book. It's so funny because it took me so long to get maybe through the first third of the book, and then I just was hooked instantly and right on its wavelength. And the film makes some different choices than the book. So the book is really focused on Agnes Shakespeare and barely even mentions William Shakespeare at all. Like, he's practically a cameo, not really existent. And a lot of that, a lot of the power in the novel is, I think, in how it gives agency and a voice to Agnes away from her husband. And in the movie, Paul Mescal plays Shakespeare, and he is a co-lead. It is a much more beefed up role. Now, Focus might run him in supporting, but to me, this is a co-lead situation pretty much. And it's interesting. I think it works. I think the movie becomes more of a father-son tale at times between Hamnet and his father, and also in how it explores what artists go through and how they grieve differently and how it feels to be married to an artist too. And I just thought it was a really, really beautiful movie, but I think I understand maybe why, and I saw this and heard this a few times at the festival from book readers, that they were, I think, a bit taken aback by those changes. And just know, I was at first too. Like, when I saw this at Telluride, I thought, like, is that working? Is that the right choice? And then I landed on, okay, it works. It's its own thing. But yeah, I understand any kind of like hesitancy to those changes too.
Yeah, I was definitely one of those people that you heard it from, that I feel like I'm still grappling with how I feel about the adaptation changes. But I think regardless, it is a really stunning piece of work that throughout is an emotional experience, particularly at the end where you just heard open sobbing from the TIFF audience. And the feelings that it brought up in clearly a lot of the audience led it to win the People's Choice Award, like we're saying, that it's touching a lot of people, whether or not they've read the book, that it's really working for a lot of people. So I think going into the rest of the season, from what has been seen widely so far, this is definitely, Nick, you mentioned it early on, but this seems to be the biggest topic maybe for us to continue to go on. But
yeah, and we will be seeing it. I will be seeing it. I'm sure you both will see it again in a couple months. So it has a wide release on December 12th with a limited release 2 weeks beforehand. I can't wait. So I think going into the New York Film Festival, that's our biggest movie. We have our contenders and a lot of overlap that we've talked about. A movie that we will see much sooner than that. So next week as of release, that will definitely shake up the conversation that I've only heard incredible raving reviews about, is One Battle After Another, PTA's next film. And we'll have an episode on that very soon to talk about the movie. There's a lot to break down, but that's the next question is, you know, will that be the new front runner and what will that take over? So that will be out very soon. I can't wait for that as well. And I know, Sophia, you might have a little insight into that.
Okay, start the clock now.
1 minute, this, we have the Las Culturistas.
Okay, we're going to do, yes, I don't think so, honey. One battle after another, doubters. This movie is incredible. Oh my God, Bennett, you actually have a clock running. Amazing. So this movie is an absolutely stunning cinematic achievement. I think if people say it's PTA's best movie, I will not fight them on it. It's unlike anything he's ever done before. I went into this, I think, thinking, you know, I'm sure I'll love it, but it probably won't be my favorite. Phantom Thread occupies that space. I like his dramas featuring, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 characters, really. This is so sprawling but not in the unwieldy way that something like Magnolia can be. It's very focused. It feels, it's 2 hours and 40 minutes, almost 3 hours, and it feels like it's 90 minutes. Big Oscar prospects, can't see PTA losing director. Like, it is just such a towering directorial achievement. So I am thrilled. And that's my time.
And that's 1 minute.
But I can't wait for you guys to see it.
I keep trying to get an early release ticket that is being shown in IMAX. And the whole thing about the movie, which, again, he's been talking about ever since The Brutalist was shot in VistaVision, but there's a VistaVision format, there's a 70mm, there's an IMAX, there are normal screenings. So there are lots of different versions of this film to see. So check all of those out. See what you have at your local theater. I am trying to see this on the biggest screen possible in different formats, and I'm hoping that I'll just want to go see it again and again and again. So we'll talk about that very soon, like I mentioned, and throughout the award season, and see how that will shake up everything we've talked about today, which is so nice and tidy, as it always is. I'm being so facetious, but I have had a great time talking about all these movies, the festivals, with both of you. I can't wait for the next festivals next year, where we can all meet up again. But we do have New York coming, and those screenings start almost immediately. So we are staying on our festival train for the next few weeks, and you'll hear updates from us on that festival as well.
Other than One Battle After Another, just looking forward now that we're out of the first waves of the fall festivals, what other big things are coming that have not been widely seen yet? And we have One Battle After Another, Marty Supreme, Avatar.
Wicked for Good. I think just seeing how that goes.
And then there's the couple New York Fest premieres, especially Anemone and Bradley Cooper's Is This Thing On?
Featuring two of my favorites, Daniel Day-Lewis and Bradley Cooper. I'm excited to see Anemone, seeing that at New York Film Festival. I'm seeing both there, but I think Anemone, I'm just curious to see Ronan Day-Lewis's directorial debut, right? Being directed by Daniel's son, but also to see the return of Daniel Day-Lewis. I think I'm just thrilled to see him on screen again. So that's probably, I would say, of what's coming, what I haven't seen yet, definitely my most anticipated. That and Marty Supreme, which the trailer for that I thought looked great. So I'm really, really eager to see that one.
But it's so interesting. That's a list of like five-ish movies left, or big ones. And especially now having been to TIFF and hearing everything about Telluride and Venice, and seeing a lot of those movies and a lot of the holdovers from Cannes, that I feel like it's such a unique position than at least I've been in previous years, where I have seen some of the big things that are going to be coming out over the rest of the fall and winter, and have a kind of a sense of what people are talking about. So that's one of the other great things about going to TIFF. You get to see, you get to be part of the conversation very early. So if you can make it there, then that's a great perk that comes out of it too.
Well, thank you so much, Bennett, for joining us today and for helping us cover TIFF. And it's always good to have you on the pod. And I think next time we have you back, we'll have an even clearer picture of the Oscar race.
Yes, thank you for having me. Loved spending time today and over the past 2 weeks with you both. And yeah, looking forward to talking about some more of the films that I saw on some upcoming pods as we go throughout the season. Want to hear all about how New York goes and things that you catch up on there. So looking forward as a listener and as a guest to the rest of the season.
Well, yes, thank you, Bennett. Thank you, everyone else, for listening. Stay tuned for more award season content. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Blue Sky at Oscar Wilde Pod. And you can catch bonus content on our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWilde.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.